Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm your host, Don Allen, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing on this beautiful evening?
Well, you know, it's almost like we were in, well, I don't want to say Atlanta. They've been having a miserable time. But, you know, it's certainly like we're in Tennessee or Kentucky. I mean, beautiful weather. Temperature's a little bit above the norm, if you will, above the average, as they say. And, you know, I'm just appreciative of the fact that, you know, we're here, because after the tragedy that's taken place here in the Twin Cities, the loss of five very young, precious black lives, kind of, you know, it requires, you know, sobering reflection and et cetera. But as I understand, we'll be getting to that a little bit later on. I know there are probably some announcements and things. A lot of people are asking about when the funerals will take place and et cetera. But, Don, you have some additional stuff you've certainly been working on with respect to education and some information that seems to be coming out. And then there was a study, which is a year late, as I remember correctly, about the absence of, and I really hate that it has to be this, the absence of qualified black artisans, if you will, and skilled workers. So why don't you just, you know, let's just segue into that, and then we'll come back to the unfortunate tragedy here in the Twin Cities.
Okay, we'll start with the Minneapolis Public Schools. Superintendent Bernier Johnson delivers $17,000 in bonuses to two officials. And again, Gore, the CEO there, received $10,000, and Grauer was given a bonus of the balance of that. And so, again, Superintendent Johnson is passing out money while, you know, these kids don't have bus service and are basically not learning anything. And they also came out, Mr. Edwards, earlier with an email saying that graduation has risen to 7% to 59% from 43%, which is kind of strange. And although African Americans are still the lowest, and Native Americans are still the lowest on the charts as far as graduation in Minneapolis public schools. And that all will also lead me to let everybody know on Monday at Hamline University, there is a panel regarding what we call the gap. We're not going to say achievement gap, but it's a gap there. And I contend it's a racial gap. It starts at 5 p.m. We hope everyone can come out from that. And one more thing, Mr. Edwards, before I go to Deed, I'd like to thank you and the Hamline University Black Men's Leadership Coalition and the Hamline University Veterans would like to thank you for coming out on Tuesday and having that lecture with some very important information that will have a resurgence of you on that campus talking about things that have never been heard before that are very important to young minds. We thank you for that. We greatly appreciate that.
Well, Mr. Allen, it was my pleasure, and I appreciate the invitation and the courtesy and respect that was shown me yesterday on the campus of Hamline, the dissertation that was delivered, as well as the Q&A. I had a great appreciation for it, and I certainly want to commend our students of color and others who attended the dissertation reflection, if you will. And I look forward to returning, if you will. And I understand that there will be an invitation to me from the law school for reflections and et cetera. And so, you know, I'm very appreciative. Thank you, and thank you to your African-American and groups of color, particularly the veterans group. Our veterans are so important to us. So, again, my appreciation. Okay.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Now, let's get into the nitty-gritty of this. You know, Mr. Edwards, we've been hearing since 2008, every fall and every spring, we hear about training and the number of jobs that are going to be brought into the African American community. The underemployed, unemployed.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh, Mr. Allen.
I know
we laughed on the radio program at KFAI yesterday, which was actually. I'm sorry. Let me control myself. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I laughed.
Okay, and so when I first started, Mr. Edwards, reporting on my news network, you know, I let it go. I thought, well, this is exciting. In July 5th, 2008, when I started Independent Business News Network, you know, in September, I heard these announcements. 1,500 jobs for the community by the end of the year. I said, oh, wow, that's great. That's something to write about. Mm-hmm. And then in that spring, as soon as the snow start melting, you get another announcement. Well, we're going to do 500 to 1,000 jobs for the community. Now, mm-hmm. I'm asking, well, does that from them jobs you promised back in 2008, did they move into 2009? But then in 2010 in the spring when the snow started melting, I heard 1,500 jobs. And in the fall, that September, I heard another 1,000 jobs. So I was being flim-flammed and befuddled and bedazzled by some public discourse that was just foul and didn't make any sense. And I investigated it a little bit further. Well, as you know, Mr. Edwards, we're called the team of Heckle and Jekyll and Dadani and Ronnie. What we say can't be true. You know, these guys, they're not credible. We're going to marginalize them. Now, help me with the acronym, the Department of Education, Economic Development, Okay. They came out with a report today that says Deed reports hiring difficulties in the manufacturing sector. Okay? That means, they said, with two-thirds of manufacturing vacancies. This means vacancies means open jobs in a state classified as hard to fill. Employers are getting creative in their search for workers. Keyword, search for workers. Okay? Including training new hires internally. Now, I contend there are many questions that need to be answered. If Summit Academy OIC is training African Americans, why is Deed sending out this message like this? Okay, there's a chart, and you can Google this. It's online. I mean, I'm not making this up, but there's a chart that says the share of vacancies reported as difficult to fill by occupation. The report was just done. They based it on old data, 2013, which we can contend is relevant today, but the vacancy of 60% for welders, 78% for machine and machinists and CNC machinists, 74% for machine tool operators, 56%
that's tool and die,
tool and die, and 56% for production supervisors, and 66% for total production occupations. This is basically, that means like your laborers and people graduating from Summit Academy OIC that want to get the entry level. So Deed got out there crying towel and said, hey, these vacancies, we have to report this. We can't fill them. So I have to backtrack and say, if we are going to train people for the stadium, it's obvious they're not going to be working on the stadium per the research that Deed has come out with. If they can't get welders, machinists, machine operators, production supervisors, and production occupations filled, and they're saying they're difficult to fill, where is that connection? Why aren't the OICs making that connection with Deed to get these people hired, which means that there's a flim-flam job going on?
Well, the reason I was laughing, Mr. Allen, and I apologize. We, want to be maximum serious in something like this, but this has been going on for a couple decades, if you will, certainly in the last decade. On October 22nd, and I know what people say, tired of hearing what happened yesteryear. I mean, this is not the Lone Ranger program, what I mean? That used to be the theme for you youngsters out there on the radio show and the television show entitled The Lone Ranger. 22nd October 2010, Velma Cordell was responding to a report that had been commissioned by the city 6 years before. It took 6 years to do the report at a cost of $500,000. We talked about it in 2011 on the inaugural year of this broadcast, if you will. I talked about it in my column, talked about it in my television programs, and et cetera. The information, the Deed is reporting now, a year late, if you will, is the same exact information with no approval that was presented by a firm out of Austin, Texas, one of the most prestigious research firms in the world. And one of the most respected and prestigious analysts in the world, Ms. Charlene Hoyt, an African-American attorney who has a firm in Chicago, Illinois, and she is renowned. And so when Dr. Wainwright, I mean, you know, we're just laying out the names and et cetera for those that want to run and Google and et cetera like that. Dr. Wainwright, who is the senior researcher for the corporation or the research entity, came here and made his presentation 22nd day October. And in the course of making presentation, Dr. Wainwright, who is a Caucasian, warned that this pattern in practice, word that we certainly must steadfastly reflect on, was a clear indicator that there were severe problems as it pertains to accessing and the training of quality personnel to meet the demands of the 21st century. The city of Minneapolis, Velma Corvell, but more importantly, the city council, including the current mayor, and at that time, the current mayor at that time, R.T. Ryback, did nothing. I mean, the council didn't do anything. There were a couple of meetings held at, like, the Minneapolis Public Library to talk in terms of actually changing the format. And when Velma Corvell got through with the process, there were less African-American contractors qualified than prior to the report of October 2010. As we said before, that report took 6 years. First commissioned by the late Ken White, if I remember correctly. And see, it's supposed to be done every 5 years. Here in Minneapolis, it gets done maybe every 15 years. Okay. So it's been known for quite some time, and it certainly was known in February, March, April of 2012 as the legislature prepared the legislation and the equity plans and all that, that there's no way that African-Americans were going to be able to be qualified to go to work on this new, quote-unquote, People's Stadium. And so you are correct. And, of course, you know, we are Jekyll and Hyde, Amos and Andy, Donnie, Ronnie, whatever the terms are. But the fact of the matter is there is no presence of African-Americans and others. In fact, we talked about on KFAI last night the anger that the Somali community should be feeling as an outgrowth of being basically taken to the cleaners and promised that they would be working on the site in, notice the date now, in July, August, September of 2013, which was kind of an impossibility, and that the Vikings were still getting ready to play and would be playing until the last Sunday in December of 2013. And so this is kind of what it's come to. And by the way, I guess I'd be kind of remiss if I didn't report and mention to people who don't read the paper, watch TV, that construction has stopped for the next couple of days, maybe for a week, because a massive beam inappropriately being removed fell. Man, it was so bad that reporters and personnel in the Star Tribune building, which is about a half a block away, thought that a explosion had gone off, another explosion, like the, you know, the one over on Cedar Avenue. People called the police, they called Homeland Security, you know, they thought that, you know, there had been a bombing. I mean, that's how much noise this beam, which probably is 15, 20 tons. You know what I'm saying, you know. But the more serious issue that you bring up is one of there was already knowledge that there were not the qualified, and that's the reason, Mr. Allen, that the gentlemen of the round table, black contractors, construction workers, journeymen, and et cetera from Kansas City, Missouri, came here in the summer of 2013, made a proposal to provide journeymen, skilled workers, and et cetera. We didn't want to repeat of what happened with respect to the restoration of the state capitol by a Kansas City company, by the way, Dunn Brothers of Kansas City, Missouri, who came here and for 3 years worked on the restoration of our beloved capitol, and couldn't find any African-Americans qualified to work on the site, and basically none were hired. I mean, you know what I mean? And there was a newspaper article, for those that, you know, want to question the authenticity of that, there was a newspaper article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune back in the spring of 2013, because Dunn Construction of Kansas City, Missouri, was pretty ticked off because they felt they were being hassled and misrepresented by the commissioner of human rights, and they went directly to the governor in May of 2013 and said, you know, governor, this is the situation in your state. I mean, really kind of embarrassing. And so Kevin Lindsay approached our good friend, Louis King, at OIC, but unfortunately they couldn't produce. All that they needed to meet the goal was 3 African-Americans, and they weren't able to find them here in any of the programs. Dunn Construction of Kansas City said, well, here's what we'll do. We'll bring up a couple of African-Americans from Kansas City to meet that goal. And nobody wants to talk about that.
No, not at all. And another point that I'd like to bring up, Mr. Edwards, is that on February 24th, 2011, Professor Samuel Myers, chair of the Roy Wilkins Center for Human Relations and Social Justice, wrote a letter to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights in response to the report at NERA, and said he said the major defects from statistical analysis are the following, and I'll just read a couple of them here. It says, the study makes no claims as to the validity and the reliability of the underlying data used to reach the central conclusion of the study. The quality of any disparity study rests primarily on the quality of integrity of the underlying data. At minimum, a sample contract should be pulled in an attempt to match the data. Number 2, the disparity ratios reported in this various tables do not align with the availability and the utilization rates reported in the same tables, although this is most likely due to a clerical error, if nonetheless is expected. And so I have that posted now, that letter, the actual letter, word for word, that Dr. Myers wrote in response to that to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights about their process, and this was garbage. So
let me just say on along those lines, I will post it on my website when I decide to get around to it. In that same document that Dr. Myers was referring to, there is a reflection, particularly authored and crafted by Dr. Charlene Hoyt, JJD of Chicago, Illinois, head of the Hoyt and Associates. You know, they said in that same report, you know, that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department had falsified information relevant to the monitoring of any number of projects, including the Twin Stadium, Fairview Children's Hospital, the TCF Stadium, and such things that falsified, and that they actually never did site visits. You know what I mean? They never did site visits. That it was all a sham. You know what I mean? And that is also in the report. And we raised the question way back, you remember, in 2010. In fact, I appeared before the city council and raised the question on how the city council was going to address those statements by the panel, if you will, or in this case the research team, under the leadership of Dr. Wainwright and Dr. Hoyt. And, you know, everybody looked up at the ceiling, including the current mayor, you know. But it's there. It's in the report. And like we said, if anyone challenges us or et cetera, then we will give page and line, as we do with regards to the stadium legislation. And we call attention to our column, in last week's edition of the Spokesman Recorder. You have to do that now. You have to cite, and I know that, you know, that's something that really happens in academia. You'd have to cite your reference and the authority that you are making reference to, and that's a professional, educational term, legal term. What authority are you citing for your quote-unquote allegations? So, yeah. But I think it's important to get that out there because we still await – oh, by the way, we still are awaiting who's going to be selected to monitor the People's Stadium. And so that our international audience understands and our national audience, this is a – as it stands right now, about a $1.2 billion project.
And, Mr. Edwards, since you mentioned that, I do have the report that was supplied to Senator Bobby Joe Champion. It just appeared in my email box. And the critical partners to this, according to that report, is the City of Minneapolis Civil Rights Office Electronic System Aids in Monitoring, Expertise in Measuring Data Report, also the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, Workforce and Prevailing Wage Monitoring, Expertise in Monitoring Data and Reporting, Summit Academy, EAF. So those are the critical partners. And so you also have here how workers get connected. Little Earth, District Councils, VSBF, YMCA St. Paul, Azuli Staffing, TTOIC, and Maverick Community Services and the Network for Better Futures. Stairstep Foundation with Knox and St. Paul College. Now, Knox said they backed out, Neighborhood Organizing for Change, so that's a typo, obviously. And Somali Education and Social Advocacy is working with CSI, which is Al Flowers, Lisa Clemens, and their Clarence Hightower, and MCTC, where Mike Christensen is the second guy in charge down there. That'll be very interesting. The schedule here, excavation January to March 2014, demolished metrodome, same thing, January to April 2014, concrete foundations, 2014 to February 2015, start steel erection, 2014, October 2015, complete FTEFE install, November 30th, 2015, sustainable completion July 1st, 2016. The workforce goals, according to this report, are 38%, 32% minority, 6% women. Targeted business, 20% construction, 19% A&E, 11% women, 9% minorities, 8% A&E. I don't know what A&E is. I'll have to ask. And also the equity program, program of project, diversity and inclusion. The budget, according here, is $763 million construction budget,
yep.
1.7 million square feet, 65,000 mm-hmm. seats, up to 125 suites, 7,500 club suites, clear, largest clear FEFE roof in the world.
We would take the opportunity to call attention to our column in last week's Spokesman Recorder, mm-hmm. in which we have unveiled the documents submitted by M.A. Mortensen in anticipation 2 years prior to the actual bid being accepted. Oops.
Mm-hmm.
A report done by them and a sporting venture corporation in which M.A. Mortensen and this venture clearly laid out the expectations, and those became the numbers that were acceptable, and they also were the numbers that were utilized by M.A. Mortensen in the so-called bid process. Though as I first reported on these programs a year and a half ago, the Minnesota Vikings really did not want M.A. Mortensen as the general contractor, but mm-hmm. local Minnesota politics dictated, and so in exchange, the Vikings got additional concessions such as the fees for licensing, you know, your seat before you could even purchase it for season tickets and et cetera. And so it was a windfall of about $18 million for the Vikings and et cetera. So all that is in play, but we would also encourage folks to read our column of last week in the Spokesman Recorder, in which we clearly indicate that there was a prior commitment to M.A. Mortensen, and I can tell you the NFL and the Vikings really were not happy when they found out about this. In fact, M.A. Mortensen was positioned to do a prototype stadium in 2009, 2010, a prototype stadium to ready themselves for what was supposed to be the procedural bid on this $1.2 billion stadium. As you reported, over $770 million in construction money and blah, blah, blah. So these are things that are in place. And, of course, this comes at a time when the Star Tribune has sold significant property at a significant figure, if you will, so that the People's Development, Downtown East, that is referred to now, can commence under the financial stewardship of primarily Wells Fargo and Ryan Construction. I mean, that's a sweetheart package. That'll be about $450 million. Probably $560 million would cost overruns and et cetera. And, you know, taxpayers will pick that up. I mean, I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, within 25, 30 years, there's going to be a hell of a debt that is going to burden the city of Minneapolis. Okay? Hell of a debt. We estimate, and we joined with, I remember a year or so ago, with then City Council Member Gary Schiff, that the debt for this stadium on the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis will be about $683 million. $683 million. That'll be your debt service and everything like that. So,
wow.
You know, that's what it will be. Look forward to it. But what else we have, Don? I mean, you know, just kind of throwing out empirical data there.
Yeah. I think we need to, Mr. Edwards, to really get in and get down to the nitty gritty of this fire in North Minneapolis, where there were five dead children. But we also need to talk about where black leadership's head is, as far as what's going on, what needs to be happening, the steps. We have no press conferences from any black flagship organizations here in town, or African-American, whatever you prefer. And it troubles me a little bit, because, I mean, I'm on Facebook quite a bit, on social media, getting emails about a dozen or so different fundraisers. And
But Mr. Allen, I mean, you know, for the purpose of transparency and clarity, now, you and other members of the executive committee of the NAACP, primarily President McAfee, First Vice President Clemens, and yourself, you've been raising money. Is that correct?
No, that is not correct, Mr. Evans. I have not raised any money. No, I am not. No, I have nothing to do with. You know what? I'm a Republican. I don't even donate to Republican candidates. Okay, so I
wait
know.
A minute. I need to get. I mean, I need to get a little transparency out here. And of course, our phone lines are always open. There are so many rumors going around,
demeaning
and attacking Mr. Troy Lewis. But there are new rumors that have emerged that indicate that a significant part of NAACP leadership has been involved in fundraising. And I'm now told, of course, Reverend McAfee was not even in town when they said that the money was raised at his church. Ms. Clemens does not involve herself in those kinds of efforts. And I told folks that I had no reason to believe that you did, but I just thought that it was something that the NAACP, because it was all NAACP people that were named, and folks are saying that there is a list. They say there is a list with your names on it. I mean, are you aware of it?
No, I am not aware of that, and I would like to see that list, if there is a list. And I think that someone's up to some tomfoolery that needs to be dealt with. Because, yeah, and
well,
by the way,
go right ahead. I'm sorry, Mr. Allen.
No, I was just going to tell everybody our phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And I've had someone holding on here, Mr. Edwards, for 16 minutes since we've been on the air, and I would certainly like to see.
Like, well, we apologize. Let's get them in and hear what questions they may have on this. We've moved to talking about the fire and the tragic death of five beautiful African American children. Go right ahead, caller.
Yeah, caller, go ahead. 8005. Would you like to say something?
Oh, is it 8005 again? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's become a common number. Is that a clone number or what?
No. That's the last four of a number I had dialed earlier.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and
okay.
So,
and what was that again? The zero what?
8005.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, phone line's open. Any questions? Now, let me just say this also for our listening audience. We were quite shocked a couple days ago when we were informed as a journalist that Child Protection has ordered a hold on Mr. Lewis's two surviving children. And are in the process of examining the possibility of removing those children from his parental care and custody. And I just really don't understand that. But with some of the vicious statements and questions that have been raised and allegations against him, some going as far back as 1982, 83, I'm just kind of figuring out. I mean, what is at play here? I mean, the issue is to allow five beautiful children who perished in a in a fire in which there's a lot of questions, to be buried with dignity. You know, I mean, how many more losses can this family endure? They lost their mother in October at age 31 to heart disease, if you will. Kimberly, just a beautiful African-American woman, a tremendous mother and parent, if you will, sudden death, and et cetera. And now I'm hearing all these kinds of stories and et cetera. I mean, what is driving this? Johnny Northside, though he does indicate that the owner of the property, who is a major, you know, homeowner, Johnny Northside, designates him as a slumlord, and I think we'll be talking certainly over the next 28 minutes, Mr. Allen, about some of the statements that are made, because also people are saying that the father is to be charged with negligence because he was, get this, Mr. Allen, because he was using space heaters in the house.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's craziness. That's just craziness.
And that is a part of the allegations that were made by anonymous phone callers and et cetera to Child Protection. Now, Child Protection already had Mr. Lewis on the radar, and the reason was that upon the death of Kim Davis, the mother of these seven children, five of whom have perished, that a request was made to take custody or to revoke parental authority by the father, because folks were talking about that, you know, those children were worth about $100,000 apiece going into foster care. I mean, I hate to be that crude and say that, but that's the kind of conversation that goes on in this country and in this state, if you will. We had an interesting call last week from a grandmother from Mississippi who has been wronged certainly by this state. You know, and she made a challenge out there, and you know, it's really kind of ironic that no sooner than that had happened that we were faced with this situation at 28th and Colfax. Here's one of the things I'm hearing. Again, the phone lines are open. I'm in both Saturday and Sunday's editions of the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
And we have a call.
The landlord, Mr. Burleson, spelled S-O-N last name, not to be confused with the man that was involved in killing two young African-Americans on Olson Highway on November 3rd, that he had newly insulated the house and that everything was okay and that, you know, maybe Mr. Lewis needed to know how to work the thermostat, you know, to warm the house up. You know, Mr. Allen, I'm being told that the inspectors, because, see, they're getting kind of confused because in Saturday's edition they indicated the inspectors had been out there a couple months before. Sunday's paper they kind of switched up and indicated that they had been there just a week and a half before. You know, I'm told that the inspectors never went in the house.
Yeah. And
here's the reason I say this in an attempt to, you know, provoke some discussion. If you're an inspector and you're inspecting a home for, you know, meeting regulations and et cetera, you come into a house and you see space heaters all over the house, including in the front living room and et cetera. I mean, you're attempting to heat that house because the heat is not working. And I've raised the question to the major white newspaper here, Minneapolis Star Tribune, on if they are prepared to ask for copies of the inspector's report and how did they write up the existence of the space heaters in that home, particularly in what has been the 30th, you know, the coldest winter in 30 years, if you will. I'm being told now that no such document showing that exists, but I know I must be wrong. Now, earlier this afternoon, the fire chief and fire marshal indicated that there was no arson, and there was a reason that they did that, because some of the calls, Mr. Allen, that were going to Child Protection actually suggested that this man set the fire in order to get the insurance off his children. Yep. I mean, this is the same man that went back in that house twice, three times, in fact, to save two of his children and injured himself jumping out the window and still going back into that building and rescuing two of his children. I mean, I'm not understanding. Is there some attempt to protect the integrity of the city here?
That's the music errors. That's what it sounds like, because what's happening here, you don't see anybody doing their homework and trying to find out about these inspections and why this person had all these space heaters all over the house. But I did find a picture of the house in the summertime, and then those attic windows are open wide, which means there's no circulation or ventilation up there. So in the wintertime, it must be pretty cold. And there's no doubt that, in my opinion, I attest that this house was not up to code and that we have serious problems with what's going on with this.
And by the way, just for, I don't know, clarity, but maybe even arrogance on my part, I am a former utility executive at one of the highest levels and am well familiar with, you know, protocol, expectations, and et cetera. So, again, for listeners, you know, in this corner, you know, Ron Edwards to the left, Mr. Allen to the right, I worked in the utility industry for 25 years. And I got to tell you, space heaters in a house in the middle of winter where you've had temperatures as low as 45, 47 degrees below zero wind chill, you see space heaters, that's a red flag. And if a landlord has said to you that, yeah, just got through insulating the house and fixing everything up and the water heater and the furnaces and et cetera, that's, you know, and here's the other piece of it. I mean, it's our responsibility tonight on this program. I'm now hearing from, again, reliable sources within City Hall that our landlord buddy, all the work that he said he did, he never took out any work permits. Oops.
Oh, no. Don't let it be so.
Now, I understand they're working on, you know, trying to take some work permits and then, you know, put them inside of the the file cabinet. The only problem is that we're into, you know, the period of, you know, cyber, is that that has to correspond with what's on the computer. Oops. So you got to bring somebody in that has the ability to move a line here and a line there and put that information in place so that it is, you know, the word they use, so that it is sequential, right?
Yes, yes.
I mean, we can't have a report in on the computer that is different from the hard paper, if you will. But I'm told there is no work permits. Now, I'm just puzzled by that because that's something that the inspectors should have done when they went into the home and saw these space heaters, if you will. Notice I said if they went into the home, because that's one of the things you have to do under Minnesota law and also federal regulations, because this was a Section 8 situation. Bertelsen's company, by the way, we want to name that too. Bertelsen's company is Mission Inn Minnesota Incorporated, which is located in Eden Prairie. In fact, on our television program to air Sunday, I make sure I put up the address and everything. And by the way, finds out that the landlord for the property there on what he's got a lot of properties. He apparently, according to the documentation from the Secretary of State here in Minnesota, Mr. Allen,
yes,
he resides at 4630 3rd Avenue South.
Oh,
now, the last time I looked, that home was owned by a Negro family.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm. Again, want to give that address for the landlord, 4630 3rd Avenue South, here, out there on the south side of Minneapolis. But I can well remember, I know that house, if you will, and that was a colored house. I mean, you know what I'm saying? But he now shows it as his home, his abode, if you will. But then he shows seven or eight other addresses as being places where he resides. So I don't know, you know, what the heck is going on, you know. Oh, by the way, you know, one of the things that happened was that the landlord, the owner of the property, you know, he was actually there at the same time the fire trucks got there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's probably right around the corner.
He's at 30. He was at 2901 Fremont. He has a urban office, what we call an urban office, you know, one for the urban community there, for your local community. Right there at, as I said, 2901 Fremont. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just around the corner from Colfax. Yeah.
Wow.
So, again, those phone lines are open for anyone that has any questions. But I've had it confirmed by absolute reliable sources that Child Protection has put a hold order through the Minneapolis Police Department on the two surviving children. I just can't get with it. I just don't quite understand the insensitivity and et cetera, particularly when he was already under investigation because, you know, folks had made the decision that he should not have these seven children. That were too many children.
Mm-hmm.
He was not in position to provide and nurture those children. And so they came to the hospital yesterday talking about, well, this is all a part of the ongoing investigation. We're just want to find out what's happening with your children. They should have said surviving children, because any dummy would have known, particularly professionals like Child Protection, that five of those babies were deceased, if you will. And they certainly knew how to come to the hospital, if you will. So in fact, some folks are saying that there's been, that folks are putting out all this stuff. We'll just make sure it gets put out on the system. People are saying that some of the personnel at MCHC are saying, well, you know, we just don't think that this man should be able to provide necessary sustenance and et cetera for his surviving two children. I mean, I just don't understand what's happening here, if you will, but I am satisfied that a order of Child Protection has been issued, is currently inside of the Minneapolis Police Department, and there will be a petition to take his remaining two children away from him.
Mm-hmm.
For what reason? I'm not sure.
Yeah, this just doesn't make sense.
I know
you must
be getting some texts. Let's give that phone number out again.
These phone lines are
open.
Our phone lines are open. It's 347-246-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. So our phone lines are open. Give us a call. If you've been out there raising money and like to announce it here on the air today, come on, give us a call and tell us where that fundraiser is and tell us who's out there making the most money for this family. And let us know, because we're very curious, and we'd like to support anything that you guys are doing. And to make it perfectly clear, I myself, Mr. Edwards, on the right, have not participated in any fundraisers at all whatsoever, but I've been trying to get people on Facebook and other social media outlets to look at this house and to deal with, the other side of it, what's going on, because there's always a hustle going on in North Minneapolis, and
absolutely. And let me say, and I'm not a member of the NAACP. Let's get the caller. That's important. Caller, what can we do for you? What's your question?
Am I on the air, gentlemen?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you are.
Well, I guess one comment to start off with. I guess I almost have to listen to the IBN News and Black Focus to actually find out what's going on in town.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. I certainly appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. I may have to just get rid of my Star and Tribune and save that little money and, you know, kind of listen to the up-to-the-minute situations, because, boy, this is stuff that I had no idea. But I want to make one comment, if I could, first.
Go right ahead, sir.
And my comment is really on the, this city of Minneapolis housing inspection type of a situation. For many years, I owned a rental property in South Minneapolis. And when I bought the rental property, there was an elderly lady lived downstairs with her son. And her son passed away.
Oh, okay.
So stayed there. But the city, the Section 8 people said, well, this is a two-bedroom. You've got to evict her. She can't have a two-bedroom.
Wow.
I said, well, I'm not going to evict this lady. She's a very good tenant. She's a wonderful person. I'm not going to evict her. Well, they said, well, we'll only pay you for a one-bedroom. We're not going to pay you for two.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, that's fine. That's fine, but she can stay there. So then they continued to give me things like my garage had peeling paint.
Okay. Oh.
Inspector came by. Now, listen now. I went over there, cut the grass diligently because it was close to my house. I cut the grass. I had a garden with greens and vegetables for the, tenants and things there.
Oh, okay.
Everything was, it looked nice as a rental property. I kept it up, worked at it. Well, they took me to court because of peeling paint on my garage. And then there was a neighbor that had a very small little, little trailer that he kept in the backyard right by the garage. You could never see it. It was just a little small spot there, just three or four foot trailer.
Okay.
Well, they tagged me. They tagged me. Said the trailer has to go. Tagged
wow.
me. I said, well, he helps me with the snow, and he, kind of keeps an eye on things, so I let him keep it there,
Right, right.
Tag me. Well, took me to court for the peeling paint and the thing in the backyard, so.
The trailer, okay.
The trailer. So mm-hmm. hot summer day, me and my sons, they were smaller then, we'd go out and peel that paint and scrape that garage down and paint it and take pictures of it, and I took it to court with me. Well, I get to court. They said, yeah, this looks okay, but $200 court costs. Next case.
Absolutely. Yes.
But,
how many times I heard that story?
I say that to say that in that particular dwelling now that I've sold over 9-10 years ago, there must be 20-25 people living in it. There are cars parked in the front yard and the backyard, like a parking lot.
Wow.
Cars that are abandoned, cars that don't run. But I don't see any tags. I don't see any. They even condemned my place because of the peeling paint on my garage.
Okay.
So I say that to say these things are enforced selectively. And really,
thank you.
As
excellent
opportunity
word.
To, you guys are really bringing this out because it's so important for the safety of the tenants. There are rules and regs. For these things, but they have to be enforced, and they can't be enforced selectively.
You're absolutely correct, sir. And let me repeat again that sources that I consider to be extremely reliable have clearly indicated to me that the house at 28th and Colfax was never quote unquote inspected, and I maintain that the red flags, a variety of red flags. Are now up because the city never responded to the Minneapolis Star Tribune's copyrighted story in Saturday and Sunday's edition of their newspaper that there were space heaters in that home. And as I said earlier, as a executive for a major utility, I can tell you that is a significant red flag, and I'm certainly calling upon
clear safety concern. Clear safety concern with the
absolutely.
Number of people in
absolutely.
That dwelling and with those space heaters, with the weather we've been having.
That's
very,
right.
very, very dangerous situation.
That's right. Let me just pass one on to you, sir, and to our listening audience, because in the last 24 hours we have been sought out by a African-American mother of 12 children, 9 of whom live in the home. In fact, she resides in that basic same neighborhood, if you will, right up there around 27th and Fremont, thereabouts, Mr. Allen M.
Mm-hmm.
She has a situation, and she's been in that house, not a question that she's, all over the place. She's been in that house quite some time, as I said before. She is the mother of 12 children, 3 who are outside of the home. There are adults, 9 who are living there. Anyways, about a month and a half ago, as an outgrowth of her continued concerns, because her youngest child, who is a little over 1 year old, is extremely infected with lead poisoning. All of her children that are currently in the home are affected with lead poisoning. She had been raising questions about this. Our landlord became agitated on a day that the mother was taking the one-year-old to the doctor, if you will. He called the police, the Minneapolis police gentleman, and indicated that the family currently in the house were squatters. The police arrived. The mother was still at the doctor's office. Some of her young children were there. Others were on their way back home. They were actually extricated from the house, put onto the sidewalk. She is now in a shelter in Eagan, Minnesota. She's been moved around to 3 or 4 different shelters because of the size of her family. Finally, what was worked out was three of her oldest of the nine were allowed to be housed in, and this is interesting, gentlemen, apparently we have some homeless facilities on the campus of the University of Minnesota, and so the oldest three of the nine are staying there while she and the other six of her children are at the facility in Eagan. They're being moved around. She is being told that she's going to lose her Section 8 because she is not providing accommodations for her children. And, of course, federal government says they're not interested in the lead poisoning issue. We suggested to her to contact the office of the Congressman Keith Ellison. It appears they may not be interested either. But I think the public needs to know. Her name is Miss Fuller. And I'm sure that there are people out there in that north side that know her and her family. Everyone tells me she's an excellent mother, if you will, excellent provider, if you will. But thrown out of her home by Minneapolis police officers based on a false allegation of her, quote-unquote, residency in that facility. This is the kind of things that are going on, both north, south, northeast, I mean all across the metro area. I know I'm getting calls and complaints and documentation how they are treating African Americans in this metropolitan area in the state of Minnesota is just outrageous.
Oh, yeah.
Ms. Allen, take over. We're going to have to switch here with regards to batteries. So I'll be back in about 20 seconds.
Okay, no problem at all. No problem at all.
All right. All right.
Am I still on? Yes, you are.
Hello?
You are still on. Yes, you are still on.
Hey, I neglected to identify myself. I'm Mr. M. I have called into the program before. I'm an avid listener of the great work that you gentlemen do.
Thank you, sir.
And one other, in regards to what Mr. Edwards was saying about that family being displaced, I mean, and then the piece about the lead paint being in the home and, going back to my story about my duplex, I had an inspector come to that duplex and not do any testing, but looked at the paint and said, this is old paint. This is lead-based paint. I want you to paint, scrape everything off of this thing and paint it, and I'll be back in a week. Okay?
Oh, wow.
So that's the responsibility. At least in my case, I was told, as a landlord, it was the responsibility of the landlord to take care of that condition. So, I mean, that's nothing that the family can be held accountable for, one.
You're absolutely right.
But again, when, you get into these situations, and I've been in social services for many years here in this area, in town, and training in that area, and, once you get police involved and system, I mean, they react so quickly. They don't get a lot of times to be sorted out. I mean, if a family has to leave a home, well, maybe they have other resources. Maybe they can make other arrangements. Sit down and talk to them. Let's not just come down on them because, poverty or lack of resources, the way they're charging rents these days and what you get for your rents, it's almost impossible, especially if you're on some type of fixed income like an MFIP or without some type of a subsidy, it's impossible for you to pay a market rent. It is absolutely impossible for you to pay a market rent. And so, and even with what they give you subsidy-wise, the amount of these rents and the amount of money that they allow to go to the landlords as opposed to the mouths of the kids, it's unbelievable. I mean, you're talking upwards of $1,000 or so for rent, and then you have $100 left for the month.
Uh-huh.
You have, so the scramble is such a scramble that, I don't know. I mean, I think by coming down on people, they're already behind the eight ball. And, it just exacerbates the whole situation when you get law enforcement. They need to be dealing with criminal things. They need to be dealing with those type of things. Once they get in the social service area, it's just a real disconnect from my observation. I'm just giving an observation as a citizen.
All right. And we appreciate it. We're coming to the end of our time. Appreciate you calling. We'll be expecting to hear back from you. Thanks again.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Allen, that phone line was open. Appreciate at least the caller. Again, the name of this African-American mother of 12 children, nine of whom are in her home, Ms. Fuller, if you will. Tragic case without a proper explanation, if you know what I'm saying, Don. What else we have? What do you have on your end? We're down, what, the last 4.5 minutes?
Yeah, 4.5 minutes. Well, actually, yeah, 4.5 minutes here.
Yeah.
And someone calls in.
We were going just an hour tonight.
Yes, sir. Yes,
so
sir.
I thought we would have a lot of calls on the Lewis situation and the tragedy of the deaths of the five babies, but I guess people are maybe still in certainly a state of shock. As our last caller said, you know, people are trying to probably process what the heck is going on because there's so much, really, if you will. But I, you know, I just remind our listening audience that what this is about is five young human beings, beautiful children, to be allowed to go in peace with dignity and respect, if you will. And by the way, for those that don't even know enough about it, these are five children, a total of seven, who lost their mother in October at age 31 years of age to heart disease, if you will. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't like she was involved in some violent kind of act, because that's what some of the bloggers, if you will, have been putting out on some of the websites and et cetera. So it continues to be a sad day. Hopefully, Mr. Allen, you'll be able to blog when the services will be held. We're being told that it's between, in this context, between New Salem and Shiloh. I understand that Mr. Lewis would prefer to have the interment, if you will, the funeral at New Salem, where the Reverend Jerry McAfee is the pastor. But I don't know. There's all kinds of politics being played. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, there sure is, and it's a shame. You know, we regret this loss in our community, but we need to focus on the things ahead to figure out, you know, how this happens and why is poverty such the big distraction here? Because this man is in a situation; he's in there with seven kids, himself as an adult, and obviously this house is not fit for that kind of community. And again, Mr. Edwards, no one's talking about the young lady that lived downstairs and her kids and her needs.
Here's what I'm told on that is that Burleson, the landlord, last name spelled S-O-N, has indicated that he will find a suitable accommodation for her and her children, if you will, and I think there would be seven in her family. That's interesting, you know, because I don't hear anybody talk in terms of what will happen to Mr. Lewis, who obviously has been clearly devastated by what is happening. But the family downstairs, the landlord is talking in terms of finding a place for them. So it'll be interesting. One has no idea when the report will be out from the fire department and the state fire marshal, who by law is actually the person that comes in and investigates and makes the determination, the state fire marshal. Don't know when the actual, but for some reason, as we said at the top of this program, Mr. Allen, the chief of the Venice Fire Department chose to do a very interesting thing by saying that arson was not a cause of the fire. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Allen, looks like we're about ready to wrap it up.
Yes, we are.
Those phone lines were open. We were hoping to hear some reflections and et cetera, but sometimes silence is a virtue, right?
Yeah.
By the way, a couple people went and visited Mr. Lewis this afternoon at 2 p.m. at the hospital. We hope certainly that they are going to be reaching out to him to help with the many needs that he and his two surviving daughters will need in the period of recovery. And also, one of our ministers, the Reverend Jerry McAfee, also was at the hospital and met and talked with the father. We just think it's important that folks know who it is that, you know, is at least showing concern, if you will, and reaching out because they have the resources and et cetera. So, but I'm glad to know, Mr. Allen, that you were not involved in any fundraising because people are saying that there's a list that has all these names on it.
Wow, interesting. That's very interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'd like to thank everybody
All
for
right.
listening. We'll be back next week.
I work on jobs with my feet in my hands.